The Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul, January 25th, marks the end of the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity every year. Ecumenical celebrations are traditionally held each year at the Rome Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls. That's not far west from the Vatican. Well, the shrine itself celebrates its dedication on November 18th each year, together with its sister cathedral, St. Peter's. Both basilicas date back to the period of the Emperor Constantine. St. Paul's was destroyed by fires and rebuilt over hundreds of years. The new basilica we can visit today was consecrated on December 10th, 1854, by Pope Pius IX. Centuries ago, the original basilica was built over the tomb of the Apostle Paul. While Peter's burial place can be seen underneath St. Peter's Basilica, the Apostle Paul's had been hidden from view. But after recent excavations underneath St. Paul's Basilica, pilgrims can finally catch a glimpse of the Apostle's tomb. The rough-hewn marble sarcophagus dates back to the time of Constantine in the 4th century, and has been buried in concrete and under tons of rubble beneath the basilica. Well, I asked Professor of Christian Art and Architecture Elizabeth Lev why the Basilica of St. Paul's is called Outside the Walls, and how Paul came to live and die here in Rome.
Because the name of the church comes from the fact that the basilica is built outside of the ancient Roman city walls. In 271, Rome had a series, today you can still see this intact series of walls, which spans an 11-mile circuit. The Rome of Paul's age in the 60s was an even smaller circuit of walls. And the Church of St. Paul, when it was eventually built by Constantine, was built outside the city walls on the site where St. Paul had been buried, and so it's referred to as the Church of St. Paul outside the walls, whereas there are churches to St. Paul within the city walls.
It's quite symbolic, too, it seems to me, that both St. Peter's and St. Paul's are on the same side of the Tiber River.
In both cases, I think even more interesting is the way they are spread directly opposite from each other. So if the Romans always construct their cities with what they call the Cardo and the Decumanus, these are two main roads, so they're the lifeline, and there's this intersection between the two roads. The churches of St. Peter and St. Paul, they make really the Cardo of Rome, the two balances that define and shape the city. And so it is a very interesting aspect of the construction.
Now, why would St. Paul's bones have been buried there? What kind of a life did he have in Rome? We know the story, especially from Caravaggio's painting in Santa Maria del Popolo, of St. Paul on the road to Damascus, who is blinded by the revelation of God. Tell us more about the life of St. Paul and how he must have lived here in Rome.
Well, St. Paul's conversion was extraordinary in every way. He went from being one of the harshest persecutors of Christians. He was a Jew. He was also a Roman citizen, though, by nature of his birth. He was freeborn as a Roman citizen, which will give him opportunities and possibilities which will not be available to St. Peter, who is not a Roman citizen. And St. Paul started our first mention of Paul is with his earlier name of Saul, persecutor of Christians, eager to go to Damascus to bring other Christians for punishment and persecution. And God's interruption in his life, Christ's revelation to him, and Saul, why do you persecute me? Blinded, helped, assisted, reborn, if you will, he becomes Paul, and he travels all over the Middle East. He goes up through the Hellenistic world. He goes to Greece. He goes to Anatolia. He goes from place to place, forming these pockets of Christians. And then he comes to Rome. And he comes to Rome as a prisoner, because when Paul was brought up for trial, when he was condemned, Paul, as a Roman citizen, had the right of appeal directly to the Roman emperor, which is exactly what plays right into the hands of the Christian plan to bring Christianity to Rome. So Paul was brought to Rome. At the time, according to the legends, the Emperor Nero was not overly interested in the problem of the Christians yet. And so Paul lived in a kind of house arrest in rented rooms for about 2 years, during which time he was able to freely communicate, evangelize, preach. Whether or not he took trips from Rome, things start to get shaky. So we know that Paul lived, he lived at least 2 years here in Rome, because it's in the Acts of the Apostles. There are a number of different areas in Rome that claim, you know, Paul slept here, but we know he lived in rented lodgings, and that Paul was able to, from Rome, he wrote several of his letters, and of course, before he came to Rome, he wrote the longest of his letters, which is the letter to the Romans.
Am I correct in recalling that there is a site in the Roman Forum that used to be a prison, and some of the apostles were held there?
Paul's life here in Rome, gradually the net grew closer as Nero's madness grew deeper. The catalyst, according to tradition, was the Great Fire of Rome. And tradition has it that,
which was in the, what, 50s?
64 A.D., mm-hmm. There was the Great Fire of Rome, which knocked out 10 of the 14 quarters of the city. The rumors that flew at the time were that Nero himself had set the fire because he wanted to build in the area. But Nero turned around and blamed the Christians for the fire. And this is documented. Tacitus tells us that that Nero claimed the fire was set by these pernicious Christians, this Jewish cult that followed a man named Crestos. So we see that the Christians are really they're in line for the first major persecution in Rome. Now, the tradition is that St. Peter and St. Paul were both in Rome in 64. As a matter of fact, we think that Paul came to Rome somewhere 60, 62, and that Peter had already been in Rome for many years after he left Antioch. And so that Peter and Paul were rounded up in the repercussions for the fire, and they were put in prison together, in the political prison right off the Forum, known as the Mamertine Prison. Whether or not that is true or can be archaeologically supported is a whole different question. But what is very, very beautiful, and one of the most lovely things, I think you know this because you and I have both lived in Rome for quite a long time, is June 29th, which celebrates the day that the two apostles were taken from their prison. So many paintings of the two embracing for one last time, and Peter marched in the direction that would later become St. Peter's, and St. Paul marched over towards the sea, and he would be executed at the site of the Tre Fontane, which still has a monastery and church on it. And
the Three Fountains.
The Three Fountains.
Why is it called the Three Fountains?
It's a legend. There's wonderful legends around the deaths of the apostles. Mm-hmm. Particularly Paul has a series of magnificent legends surrounding his death. That the head of Paul was beheaded. It's his right as a Roman citizen as well, to a swift death, as opposed to Peter, who was going to be crucified. And that Paul was led out. He was bent down, he was beheaded, and his head, when severed, bounced three times. In each place his head bounced, a fountain sprung up. And so this is the site of the Three Fountains.
Which is an actual church now.
Which is today an actual church on the Laurentina, mm-hmm. with three fountains. Mm-hmm. Which have, you know, mosaic flooring from an earlier period than when Paul died, but it's still a beautiful place to go and a wonderful place to remember the witness of Paul. And then the body of Paul was taken a few kilometers down, a little ways down, to where the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls is today. Although a section of the skull was removed at some point, again, in the very early era of the relics, you know that the bodies of the apostles were moved around a bit because of persecutions, because of later date, because of other problems. So, for example, in the Catacombs of Saint Sebastian, there's the Room of the Apostles where Peter and Paul were allegedly kept together. Their remains were kept together in a safer place. And in the Church of St. John Lateran, the huge reliquary over the main altar, the papal altar of St. John Lateran, the reliquary contains a piece of the skull of Peter and a piece of the skull of Paul. But I trust the rest of Paul will be in the sarcophagus. Mm-hmm. You know that the description of the grave of St. Peter comes from a man named Caius, who left us a written description of the grave of St. Peter and says he saw the tombs of St. Peter and St. Paul. And so it's good to know that there is a document. There's a document that dates from about 200 AD, and he was writing a sort of an apologetics, a kind of defensive letter. And in the midst of it, he says, "I can show you the trophies of St. Peter and St. Paul." So we know in 200, before Christianity is legalized, before they're building churches, we already have a document that testifies to veneration of the relics of the martyrs, won out by the Tre Fontane, out by the Ostiense road, and the other one on the Vatican Hill.
Elizabeth Lev is a professor of Christian art and architecture for Duquesne University's Rome campus.